We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride. Hayes Carline is here. Lauren Brooks is here. Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frangie. Good to have you with us. So I didn't realize Sid Bream was 29 years ago today. Did you know that, Hayes?
I did not.
No,
until,
I didn't
Twitter
know that.
Reminded me of that glorious moment of my childhood. Yeah, fantastic.
How about that, Brooks? That's what I got. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Not about that. 29 years ago. Okay. All right. I want you to know. There's the grudge holders. I'm not one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I hold no grudge at all to that pathetic loser, Barry Bonds, who threw an 18-hopper to the plate. Other people would hold a grudge to that pathetic loser piece of garbage. Me, I wouldn't do that.
Right.
So I just want you to know that.
The thing
nice
that,
throw. I didn't want
an
that.
Average throw gets him by three steps,
well,
by the way.
He couldn't be expected to do everything. The one out of 18 in the series, okay, for the guy before he had his head blown up the size of a goddamn garage.
I wonder if it was at that point he decided, let me just juice.
Maybe the one for 18 before the 18 hopper. Maybe that was it. Okay, maybe he was. They were still inventing the cream and the clear. But I'm not bitter. Okay, other people would be bitter.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, it was a fantastic moment, I don't remember exactly what I did when Bream was ruled safe. I know that I was thrilled because I was much more of a baseball fan when I was 16 than now. But so I don't know exactly what I did in that moment. Do you remember what you did?
I did, and I'll tell you in a minute. But Lauren, would you do me a favor? Would you Google something for me, please?
Sure.
Would you Google Stan Belinda? Belinda, age, height, and weight, please. Stan Belinda. I'm going to need an age, current age, and a height and weight. That's all I need. I mean, my needs are small.
All right. Okay. Stanley Peter Belinda is 6'3". He is 187 pounds, and he's 55 years old.
Stan Belinda's 55?
That's what I
That's
show.
All he is? That's all that loser is 55?
Mm-hmm.
So he's 8 years younger than me. So at the time,
from Huntington, Pennsylvania.
So at the time, Stan Belinda would have been how old would he have been
21?
In 91? Yeah, okay, that's all he was. Stan Belinda. Okay. Well, I'd fight him right now, Hayes. That's where I'm going with this. Okay? And I think I would win.
Yeah. 55 minus 29 is 26.
Okay, so he's 26. At the time. I would fight him right now. I would beat Stan Belinda right now. You agree with me?
Yes. I can see it in your eyes.
He's got that look like the guy at the bar you don't want to fight. The night Stan Belinda scored through a 74-mile-an-hour beach ball over the plate to Francisco Cabrera, who lined it to left to Barry Bonds, worst arm in baseball history. Barry Bonds was a three-tooler, okay? He was a four-tooler. One of the tools is five, but his pathetic arm was so bad, he loses a tool. Okay, so he's a three-tooler, just so you know, okay? People know the story by now, I would assume, because I've told it 7,000 times.
We have new listeners every day.
Yeah, my wife was about 8 3/4 months pregnant. I'm laying in bed. We're laying in bed at our home in Mandarin, watching the Pirates play the Braves. I think the Pirates had the best team in baseball then. I still believe that. I say that a lot, I guess. They were the favored team. The Braves came out of nowhere. You know the story by now. Dave Justice is on third. Sid Bream is on second. Francisco Cabrera, Sid Bream with his knee braces on second. Francisco Cabrera singles to left. Dave Justice scores. 15, 20 minutes later, Sid Bream scores. Okay. I'm laying in bed. My wife, God bless her, was kind of onto the bed rest thing. I've got a remote control, one of those little white remote controls back then. And the TV is across the way, so I kind of sidearm it. I mean, I drop down in here and sidearm the remote control out of rage across the room. It flies over the TV, this little TV on this little TV stand, hits the wall, and shatters.
I think it was going faster than 74 miles
there's no
per
question.
Hour.
There's no question. It shatters. When it shatters, it's got two AA batteries. I don't know where one of the AA batteries went. One of them came right back at my wife's forehead. and at the, my wife's 8.5 months pregnant, and a AA battery is coming back at her forehead. At the last minute, she moved her head kind of like Muhammad Ali, and it hit the wall, and I'm not exaggerating. At that point, I didn't have enough money for the divorce attorney. I knew that. Okay. And so my daughter was born 2 weeks later, about the time that my wife started speaking to me again. Okay. And the Pirates were really good for those 3 years. And because of me, God decided the Pirates should lose 20 years in a row. So then there were 20 straight losing seasons until 2012. That's my story. That's 100% true story. I literally threw the remote control across the room. It literally shattered. And I'm lucky the AA battery didn't kill my wife. That's 100% true story.
The other battery we believe is orbiting somewhere around Neptune.
It could be. It could be.
I'm imagining you going to confession.
Yeah.
And telling the priest what you did, and the priest almost chuckling on the other side.
Yeah, but it's a really, it's a true story. I threw it in it, and I did walk in it and walk out of the room, and my wife, before she could yell at me, I said, "Don't say anything. This is my moment." Okay, we had this little deck in the backyard, and we had a little deck over the water in our house in Mandarin. I walked out the back door. I had a little cat named Whiskers. Whiskers kind of looked at me. Whiskers knew better than to follow me. I walked out the back door. Through the little screened-in lanai, walked out into that deck, and just stood there for 30 minutes. Just stood. Didn't talk to anybody. Didn't say anything. We had this little deck over the wall. Just literally stood there. And that's my day. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
One thing I feel like you don't do anymore is watch intense sports in bed. Like, I feel like you've upgraded to couch.
Yeah, I have. That night might have ended it. I might not have been invited anymore. And because poor Suzanne, the last couple of weeks were hard for her. Yeah. She had one of those hard. That's the truth. My daughter was born very healthy. So God didn't punish my wife or my daughter. He just made sure the Pirates lost for 20 straight, and the Pirates lost for the next 20 years, 20 straight losing seasons. And it's because of me. It's because I threw the remote control. So that's my Sid Bream story, okay?
Yeah.
Top that Sid Bream, Francisco Cabrera people. And I can tell you, watching the game, Stan Belinda was so bad. He was such a – they're out of relievers. That people don't remember this, that two pitches earlier, Cabrera hit a rocket just foul, a line drive that just missed the foul line. And you knew he was about, you know, barring an act of God, he was going to square one up. You just hoped it was at somebody. Stan Belinda wasn't freaking fooling him. How much longer did Stan Belinda play? Okay, because I'll fight Stan Belinda.
Gibby, can we get Stan Belinda on the phone?
I'll fight him. I mean, that's who threw the. In case you're wondering, that's who threw the pitch,
right?
Just so you know. So there.
From what I can tell, his career started in 1989 and he didn't finish until 2000, and he finished with the Braves.
Of course he did.
Well, he's in our ring of honor.
Yeah, right. Of course he finished with the Braves. I mean, I did not know that, but of course he did. Of course he played for the Braves. And probably won the goddamn Cy Young with the Braves, too. So
I don't think he did that.
So I did not
realize. What were his final numbers in his career?
I don't see anything in the very last year. It says games pitched 10, but like no stats. Yeah.
So. Stan Belinda. God bless Stan Belinda.
But like his career stats, what did he?
His career ERA is 4.15.
Okay. Thank you, Stan. Good to have you with
us. Wins and losses, 41-37.
How he had 80 decisions is unbelievable to me.
Does it bother you that he's getting a pension from Major League
Baseball?
It
bothers me that he finished with the Braves. That pisses me off. I had no idea. How did I know that I had no idea he went to finish. Of course he did. They probably rolled him into the goddamn limousines, what they did.
That was the easiest signing in team history.
God almighty. So, that's where I was. That was my Sid Bream moment. So, and I heard the boys talking about it today. JJ goes, hey. Because we rotate who does the handoff, and JJ is such a good dude, by the way, big Braves fan. JJ is good a dude as there is, and we rotate who does the handoff, and the three of us take turns, and it wasn't my day today, so JJ peeks his head out, and goes, "Hey Frank, hey we're doing Sid Bream today, hey Frank, we're doing Sid Bream." Like I'm going to race down there. Hey,
it's Sid Bream.
Let me be part of that. Hey Frank, come on. Right. Thanks, JJ. I'm good, okay? I'm good down here hanging out at the end of the hall. Hey! So I'm good.
We'll make sure that when it's the Lindsey Scott anniversary, do the end.
Yeah, that's great. Let's have Lindsey Scott on next. So. Anniversary of Sid Bream. All right, a lot of things to talk about today on the program. We'll talk Jags and Dolphins coming up today on the program. I am going to talk about the state of Georgia, but not at the Atlanta Braves, although I'll talk about them a little bit because they got a really good team. a thought or two about Georgia. We touched on it yesterday, but I got a thought or two about Georgia. We're going to start with the Jags and get to some Georgia coming up a little bit later on in the program. Duval County Scholar Athlete is in today. Jimmy Heim stops by to talk SEC football. Glad you're with us on a Thursday, and it's an Old Rock Thursday. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Wake up, Maggie.
So here's the deal. Great song by Rod Stewart. Love Rod Stewart. But it's not just Rod Stewart.
Interesting.
I'm getting excited.
And I
love Do we have a theme?
Well, it's my kind of theme. It's okay. not like songs that say Tuesday, one of those things.
Don't say it like those are bad themes.
I did. I said it very condescending.
Yes,
it was a very condescending moment. I'm mad. Sid Bream's 29.
Well, this is Sid Bream's playlist. Yeah. Right, it's the theme.
Right.
It's his favorite song, in fact.
This song was one of the top 10 songs of 1971, 50 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So we have the best 10 songs or the best 8 songs of 1971.
Very cool. I think this is one of the greatest rock songs
ever written. Great rock ballad. One of the greatest rock ballads ever. Yeah. It really, really is. I mean, Maggie May is legendary.
You know how you know this is so legendary? Because to my knowledge, no one has ever covered it.
Yeah. They haven't, have they? They really have. That's a great point. They have not ever covered it.
No one's ever covered Piano Man, to my knowledge, either.
That is a really good point, by the way. Wow, how about that? Well done. Well said. So, all right, a lot of things to think about now. We got Sid Bream out of the way, and I'm pouty and mad at everybody. Where's Barry Bonds now, by the way, with his big head? Does he still have a big head? He had a little head back then.
I can't imagine.
He had a little head back then.
Yeah, it's.
Can the Jags beat the Dolphins? Why do I think they might win?
The Jaguars.
Because they might win.
I think they might
Jaguars
win.
The Jaguars should beat the Dolphins.
I think I might pick them.
The Jaguars have a better quarterback, no matter who starts for the Dolphins. Yeah. The Jaguars have a better quarterback. And the Miami Dolphins defense is not good. So Trevor Lawrence should be able to carve them up like Tom Brady just did. And yeah, I think, and their run defense isn't really good either. So the Jaguars should be able to get as much as they want on the ground with James Robinson, Carlos Hyde. And they should be able to throw all over the secondary. So this is a day where the offense should finally score over 30 points.
Yeah, I forgot that I mean, I'm sitting there saying, so you guys don't think I've lost my mind. I think I'm going to pick them. Would you pick them today?
I've gone back and forth on this, preparing for Friday with my analytics team.
Yeah.
And this has been a game that's really given us a lot of trouble. If I had to pick at this moment, I would pick Miami because I still can't get it out of my head that this team has not won in over a calendar year.
Yeah. You almost got to see Dolphins, it. You got to see it once.
The Dolphins have at least walked off of a field this year winning a game.
But Trevor Lawrence isn't a part of the ones last year, so that's
no,
why
he's
I
not.
Feel like we have to separate that.
But I get the point.
I think
this is going to sound crazy, but I think they might be right now today with Tua having not played. And I think Tua's playing in this game. I got a couple of buddies in South Florida media. They all think Tua's playing. So the word seems to be, and Urban seemed to indicate that he thinks Tua's playing.
Correct.
I think with Tua playing his first game back and Trevor not, and I think the Jags may put a better team out there. Is that possible?
Well, it is possible because the Jaguars, for whatever you think about them, and turnover margin is certainly an ugly number for them. There's no question. But the Dolphins have so many ugly numbers right now, and I'll give you a few of them. The Dolphins' defense on third down is allowing a conversion 57.1% of the time. I have never seen a number even remotely approaching that.
Great point.
This late in the season. 57.1%. Just to give you an idea, the Jaguars, who we don't, you know, consider to be great at getting off the field on third down, are at like the low 40s percentile. I think it's like 42%. So the Dolphins can't get anybody off the field on third down. They've been outscored in the second quarter 44-3. And opposing quarterbacks against the Dolphins this year are completing 67.5% of their passes, 12 touchdowns, 2 picks, passer rating of 108.2. Now, the only caveat I will throw on all of this when you compare these two teams is I think the Dolphins have played a much more difficult schedule because they've played Tampa Bay, who is an absolutely elite team. They've played Buffalo, who is absolutely an elite team, and they actually beat New England, who I think is at least an average team. Whereas I think the Jaguars, once you get beyond Arizona, and I still don't know if Arizona, to our conversation yesterday, is really an elite team. I know they're the last unbeaten, but I don't know that they're an elite team. Like, I know Tampa Bay and Buffalo are elite teams. So that's the only caveat I have there. But, I mean, you look at the numbers. The Jaguars should not just win this game. They should win this game by 13 points.
Right. They absolutely should. The question that we always have is, when you have lost a significant player defensively, like Miles Jack is obviously not with the team even in London, can they figure out how to replace him without it looking terrible? Now, he wasn't wearing the green dot and communicating with the defense last week. That was Damian Wilson. So at least they have had a different linebacker in communication with everyone. But he still is one of their better players.
Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts, questions about that. I'm going to go through all the questions. Number one, does the travel help them at all? Because I don't sense that it does, because there's too many guys here who haven't traveled. The Dolphins, by the way, have played more games in London than anybody but Jacksonville. Did you realize that?
I did not. That's a great stat.
They're second. The Dolphins have played there five times. Only the Jags have played more than the Dolphins. So it's not like their franchise as a group. Now, they got young players that haven't played there. But it's not like their young franchise as a group hasn't been over there. So they know their logistics people know how to manage that. So they've been over there too. Secondly, it's a whole new group of Jaguars. I can tell you the trip's very different than the trip was to Wembley. They're playing in Tottenham. They're staying out on the outskirts. So it's a very different – it's a whole different ordeal. So I don't know – I don't sense that the travel helps them. I think it's kind of the same for both teams. In past years, and you made the point, the Ravens game, I think you made the point, other games where the travel really helped them, I don't know that that's a factor. With all the newness with these two teams, particularly the Jaguars, and a new stadium and a new hotel, I don't know that it helps them significantly.
I don't think it helps them. Ballou and I were talking about this on our podcast, Death Taxes and Duval. I think for the really it's they haven't had a little London advantage like they do now, in my opinion, since they first went over there in 2013 to play the 49ers. I mean, I think they didn't go last year because of the pandemic. Obviously, most of the players on this team are rookies or second year players. And then you look at the established veterans that have been to London many times, DJ Chark, Brandon Linder, Miles Jack, AJ Cann. What do they all have in common? They're not going to be on the football field on Sunday for the Jaguars. So they're injured. So I think you look at it, and then you add in the component of Urban Meyer, who is basically seemingly treading water every week, trying to come up with a game plan of some, you know, cohesiveness. And now you're factoring in that now he's got to do that and play a game internationally. I think it's if the Jaguars win, it will be because they were just the better team that day. I think very little of it will be the London intangible of familiarity.
Well, the Jaguars will get 250 yards of offense passing and 250 yards of offense rushing, right?
That's a lot.
Chalk that up to a win.
That would be a lot. There's no question. Who goes deep?
Who goes deep?
How do they stretch the field?
Jamal Agnew?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, and that's one of the things that concerns me the most is how do you stretch the field? I mean, DJ Chark was their field stretcher. He's out. They've to their credit, they tried. They tried with Devin Smith to see if there's anything left. They signed Tyron
Johnson,
who ran so many deep routes for the Chargers. They tried him this week to sign Anthony Miller, who's really fast, and the best thing he does is run vertical routes. I mean, they're trying to find guys. Laviska Shenault, who's a pretty good player, it turns out, but probably isn't going to be a deep route runner. Doesn't look like. Marvin Jones is more of a possession guy.
Tavon Austin
is twitchy. He's stop and go. But I don't sense he's as fast as he once was. So how do you stretch the field a little bit? So that's a question, right? Who rushes the passer?
Well,
how do you generate pass rush?
That I think they can get accomplished. I think they found some confidence in that.
And it's another team with a bad
week.
Line.
And I think Joe Cullen talked about, you know, I think they found their stride with that against Tennessee. So I think it'd be disappointing if all of a sudden that that falls off. And I think Tua is a player that is going to pat the ball a little bit, that's going to try and make something happen. And that also gives you, you know, that extra millisecond or more to make the kind of game-changing play this defense has got to make if they're going to snap this losing skid. I like the matchup there. I think between Josh Allen, DeJuan Smoot, Kalyvon Chaisson, you know, you're starting to wonder, you know, it seemed like, you know, the staff is starting to believe that maybe the light is starting to turn on a little bit for Kalyvon, which would be great. So I think they'll be able to, I don't think they'll have to get too exotic to get after Tua. They just have to, you know, finish the play once they're there, which, you know, has been an issue at times. But the pass rush in this matchup, I actually think, favors the Jaguars.
Yeah, that's about time for that. But yeah, I agree. Between Josh Allen, Kalyvon Chaisson, DeJuan Smoot, they'll get to Tua.
We'll see. We'll see.
What would you guys do if you were picking it right now? I'd still take the Dolphins, though my head is telling me the Jaguars should win this game.
At 3:20, I was on the Jaguars. 3:31, I might be on the Dolphins. I think if we picked today, I would have picked the Jags. But then the problem is, what you said, is you have to learn how to win, and young teams that haven't won yet have that problem, and they just do. And so at least Flores has been a head coach in the league for a little bit. So, I mean, I'm right down – it depends on when you ask me. But I would have started the show today. Probably right now I'd pick the Jaguars. What would you pick right now?
I'm picking the Jaguars. The confidence that I have is more because some of Miami's best players are not playing. Yeah. And I do think this is going to be Trevor Lawrence's best game.
And I also think this. Yeah. He's getting close. If he had some help and some weapons, he's
which is exciting because we've only been through five games.
Yeah, but he's getting close. I do think that. So I agree with that. But and the other thing too, by the way, the Dolphins are tight now. They were supposed to be better. The Dolphins expected to have a decent team. I'll bet you projections in Miami were 9-10 wins. Would you agree?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They were expected to have a better team. So they're reeling a little bit. There's more pressure on them, it almost feels like. Right this minute, I would pick the Jaguars, but I've gone back and forth. And when we finally have to pick on Friday, I don't know who I'm going to pick.
Gibby, what would you do right now?
I would pick Miami. I mean, Jacksonville's got to show me first. You know, we can say all day long Jacksonville should win this game. They also should have beat Houston, and they lost. Yeah. So I can't pick Jacksonville until they show it to me.
Yeah, but you're not alone now. I would think what Gibby just said is the consensus. Then I'm not picking them until they win one, until I see them win one.
Miami's over-under was 9.5.
Yeah, what's the line, by the way, in the game?
The Dolphins are a 3-point favorite.
Three, the Dolphins.
And they're expecting a pretty low-scoring game. The over-under is 47.
That is low-scoring.
So they're expecting 24-20. Yeah.
By the way, I would think if ever the Jaguars will have a better showing as far as fans in London, I would think it would be this game. A, all the years amassed going there, but also – London fans, this is their first time to get to see Trevor. So I do think we'll actually see and hear a little bit more of the Jaguar
a little bit
fandom.
More. Yeah, but I will tell you, I am. If you ask me 10 minutes, I may say the Dolphins. I don't know who I'm going to pick. I mean, I've gone back and forth. But if they don't win this one, I can pretty much tell you the next handful I'm going to pick.
And that's part of it, too. I mean, we all want to pick the Jaguars.
You want to pick the Jaguars.
Yeah,
that's
so
correct.
There's a heart component here where I'm with you. I'm like, well, if I don't pick them to beat the Dolphins, then am I just going to basically have picked them to win the opener and then never pick them again? And I hate doing that, but I need something. Yeah. I mean, I'm not asking for the moon here. I'm not asking for home field advantage throughout the playoffs. I'm just asking to not be a complete embarrassment every single time that you step on the football field. But you got to get a win. You got to play 60 minutes of good football for me to want to, you know, pick you to win something.
One other question I wrote down. Who plays instead of Miles Jack? I mean, Dakota Allen's the backup. You just put him in and go?
I think Shaq Quarterman, and I think that because he was made available to media today, so I get the feeling that it'll be him.
I don't think I would mind that. I know that's not what he is. He's a bloody-your-nose guy the same way Damian Wilson's a bloody-your-nose guy. But I think I'd rather see Shaq Quarterman. I think there's upside for him. He's not a great in pass coverage, but Dakota Allen, I don't know that he is either. Again, he's the backup because he's faster. So he's the backup to Miles' spot because Miles is fast. So Quarterman backs up Wilson. And I get it. But I think I might be with you. I think I might see – I think I might prefer Shaq Quarterman given – the way this whole season's unfolding.
I'm ready to see Shaq Quarterman what he can do with 50 snaps in a game.
Yeah, you're right.
I want to see that.
I do too. even though he plays next to Damian Wilson and they're both run stuffers, not pass. I know. I'm like you. I hope they play him. I think we're all in agreement. Even though that's not what he is, I hope they play. He's a smart as heck kid, so he can play both spots.
One quick last question. Both kickers went to London?
I would think.
Because he said he was going to take the practice squad.
I would think they'll take those kickers.
So the competition continues overseas.
And by the way, who do you think kicks?
Boy, I guess I have to say Wright.
I would say Lambeau.
Really?
See, I'm going to guess
because Wright messed up.
I would have guessed Wright too, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, Wright slipped on one, so I don't know if the coaches how much of that they put. You know what I mean?
Like the biggest concern about that is
his 53 yarder would have been good from 52.
Yeah, yeah. The concern is that he doesn't have a strong leg. He doesn't have a strong leg, and he slipped on the other one. So, but who knows who's going to kick? They may not know yet. So, but I would guess Matthew Wright, but we'll see. We'll wind up seeing what winds up happening. So, all right, we got a lot more to talk about today on the program. Get to some Georgia Bulldog talk. A lot of college talk coming up in just a bit. But we'll have a Duval County Scholar Athlete when we come back. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Hey, let's go! And now, this week's Scholar Athlete of the Week. Brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialists and the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Local Union 234 on 1010 XL.
We love our time with our Duval County Scholar Athletes. Before we get to Sydney, this is the second song in our playlist. So this is a top eight song from 1971.
Yep. You know it?
I do know it, but I'm not going to come up with the name of the band.
You know it?
Is this The Doors, right?
It is The Doors.
Yeah, okay.
All done.
And the title comes like right out of the gate.
You know it.
On the Storm.
It's the first thing he said. Yeah.
Riders on the Storm.
We're going to give it to you.
That's right.
Carline, I would have gotten it.
Carline's going to know these, I think. I think you're off to a good start. So there you go.
All right. Now I'm going to guess Sydney Goodrow, a senior at Fletcher, does not know The Doors, but that is neither here nor there.
Poor Sydney. She gets it. She starts off volleyball and you hit her with this music
really?
From
1971.
Sydney, congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. All right. So you are a megastar volleyball player. Tell us about when you started and what position you play.
I started in seventh grade with my best friend at the time, and we kind of just fell into it, and I've been a middle blocker ever since then. We kind of started as a joke, and I just fell in love with it.
Awesome. I love middle blocking. Have you ever broken any fingers doing it?
Pinky. It's really bad right now.
I had a feeling.
So did you play other sports? Did you just fall in love with volleyball out of the gate? Because you're a big-time volleyball player. Did you experiment?
I was a soccer player for 7 years since I was four, and I started volleyball pretty late for when most people do, and I didn't really like it as much. My older sister played it, and she's a star at it, and I was not. I was tall and lanky, and I was uncoordinated in soccer, but I kind of fell into volleyball, and I guess I got good at it. So
very cool.
Sydney, do you have a favorite performance, favorite game overall that springs to mind when you think of your career?
Every Gateway Conference we've had, we've kind of excelled as a team, and I think those are probably my favorite memories. We always just get really hype, so we have our best performances then. So.
You were telling me in the break that you're a surfer, but you're headed to the U.S. Naval Academy. Not so much surfing in college, right?
No. Sailing.
There you go. But I'm guessing sailing. Surfing has to be really good for back muscles, you know, arms, all that kind of stuff for volleyball.
Yeah, definitely, especially with the paddling and the swinging, and that definitely correlates. So,
tell me all about the Naval Academy, how you landed on that destination, because that's really cool.
Yeah, I emailed them. My older sister was being recruited by them and for soccer. And I emailed them because I was interested and I've heard so many good things about it. And they emailed me back, thankfully. So we just kind of stayed in touch. I talked to them on the phone a lot and I finally visited and I just got an offer to play on the volleyball team. So
that is, we talked during the break. I've got cousins in Annapolis. I've never been. But the town's supposed to be fantastic,
it's
right?
It's gorgeous. Even without the school, it's gorgeous. Everyone there has a Navy flag, and it's just a huge family that just keeps on growing. So
very cool.
What do you hope to study?
I hope to study aerospace aeronautics in my 5 years of service. And after that, I'd hope to do medicine.
So you want to be in school for like 20 years?
Yes, as much as possible. I do not want a job.
I was just going to say, you're in the chess club. How fun is that?
I do love the chess club. It's really fun. And you feel really nerdy doing it, but it's also super fun to just play games. And the teacher is always there rooting you on, which is always really fun.
I want to ask you, we've done this for a lot of years, and I know a lot of people that were good high school athletes. When you go to a service academy, you have to know that the service time comes after school.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everybody I talk to embraces that. Did you think about, was that ever going to be a deterrent? Obviously it wasn't. But was there ever a time you thought, I may not want to do that because I want to get into med school or whatever? It didn't seem to bother you a bit, did it?
No, it really doesn't bother me. I've always kind of thought that joining the military would be something really neat, and helping fulfill the honors of like the mission of the Naval Academy with honor, duty, loyalty is kind of something amazing to me. And I think that doing that would really be really fulfilling and something amazing and a great experience for me.
That's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us about Beaches Cleanup, something that you're involved in.
I do this every year. Even with COVID, I was going out by myself and picking up trash with my teammates and stuff. And doing beach cleanups is just a fun thing to do with your family, and it helps keep your beach clean, which is really important to me. So.
And you're living at the beach now, but you're originally from Minnesota. What's the coldest temperature you've ever experienced?
Negative 20. It is horrible. It was really cold. And my parents' credit card snapped at the gas station. So,
We couldn't even get gas. That was before Apple Pay.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's cold, but I got a little chilly hearing you say negative 20, so it is, though.
Give me some Vietnam flashbacks.
Sydney Goodrow is from Fletcher. She is a terrific, terrific volleyball player, headed to the Naval Academy, and it is our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week. Thanks for coming by. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
All right, Sydney Goodrow, a terrific volleyball player and a really good student. The Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week from Fletcher and headed to the Navy Academy, the Naval Academy. What we were talking about during the break and to her, I have heard Annapolis, and I've got cousins there. My mom was the youngest of five, and so there are seven of us cousins. And I'm the youngest of the cousins because my mom was the youngest to have kids. But one of our cousins has lived in Annapolis since he left Johnstown when he was a kid. So he's lived there forever. And I hear Annapolis is just this gorgeous place on the water, and it's spectacular. And Hayes, I've been to Baltimore countless times, and it's right there. I think Baltimore and Annapolis, I think, are like right next
really
to each
close.
Other, really close enough. And like a dummy, because I am a dummy, I've never gone to Annapolis, but it's supposed to be just spectacular.
I'd love to see it, and to hear Sydney talk about, you know, her motivations for wanting to be a part of that. I mean, how amazing is that? I mean, that is great stuff right there.
Yeah, it really is. So congratulations. She is our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week. We get to the top of the hour. I want to get into the Georgia Bulldogs a little bit, but I'm going to hold that. Gibby, did you see where Mike Schilt got fired?
Yeah, that was a surprise a little bit. I saw that the GM for the Cardinals said it was philosophical differences, whatever that would mean. But, yeah, surprising.
They won 17 games in a row at the end of the year. 17 in a row and fired the manager. I mean, put that in perspective. That is a football team that starts 5-4 and then promptly wins 8 straight and is 13-4 heads of the playoffs and fire the coach. I mean, there's your perspective.
Yeah, and it's a great one. This is what pops into my head. It's a traditional power in St. Louis. It doesn't make a lot of sense on the surface to what you're saying, that they're firing them. Is there a big fish out there that you can think of
good question.
That St. Louis is targeting that they feel very confident is going to take the job?
That's a great question. I'd have to think about whether that exists. But that's kind of what happens.
If just hypothetically, and indulge me because I don't know the sport you guys do.
Yeah.
But if the Cardinals wanted Kevin Cash and said, we'll give you
– You stay away, Hayes.
I know this is going to upset you.
Right.
We'll give you $12 million a year to be the Cardinals manager. What in the NFL you can do that, but you have to send draft compensation to the club to do it. It almost never happens.
Well, it almost never happens in baseball. It has. Chuck Tanner, the Pirates traded him. The Pirates traded Manny Sanguin and a catcher and some draft picks to the Oakland A's so they could have Chuck Tanner as their manager. It happens almost never. The problem is the contract situation. But I will tell you to your question, if Kevin Cash, for instance, and there's others. But if Kevin Cash's contract is up, and I don't know if it is or not, but if Kevin Cash, who might be the best manager in baseball, if his contract is up, something like that might be behind this. That is a really good take. Because, and again, I don't know Mike Schilt or whether he's – I mean, I watch a lot of Cardinals games because they play the Pirates, they play in the division. I don't know a lot about his details. But it is really unusual to get a team playing that well, and then to get fired. So you know that decision was made before the run, because if they were torn, they don't fire him. You know, so clearly this decision was made before they made that 17-game run. Gibby, did it shock you? It shocked me.
It is shocking. Mike Shields from Charlotte, North Carolina. I know a ton of people. I got a bunch of family from up there. They can't figure it out today. I know people that are host shows and stuff up there, and they can't figure out what happened. And there's got to be more to what we're finding out here, because it can't just be that he just didn't do a good enough job. And like you said, they just won 17 games in a row, and if they hadn't played in the wild card game, they might still be playing.
Let me throw this at you.
By the way, cash was extended through the 2024 season, so okay. Don't
stay off. Well, and there really isn't in Major League Baseball right now. Is there that Bill Cowher, Tony Dungy, you know, great coach. That's not. I mean, that I can't think of one in Major League Baseball.
No, we've gone to a stretch where Major League Baseball has gone from the La Russas and the Torres and the Joe Maddens and the Clint Hurdles to more of a younger Kevin Cash, Derek Shelton type guy. So it's a more Craig Counsell. So it's more young, former players, relatable guys. For the longest time, the managers were guys who you never knew as players. Well, now there's more and more managers who played. There's more Aaron Boones and Dusty Bakers and Craig Counsells and guys that you knew as players than there used to be. That has changed. That has changed to where there's Snitker and there's guys like that didn't. But there's a lot of guys that you knew as players. So the paradigm has shifted. I'm going to go back to the first thing you said. And I don't know who it is. And if Cash is under contract, it's not him. But whether it's somebody on another team, whether it's somebody who's ready, that I wonder if that's part of it. I tell you what, I'm going to ask my friend Mark Lamping, because Lamping's very connected to all the key people up there, and because it's very. But I'll bet you're on to something. I have no idea who it is, but I'll bet you're on to something. And we probably see it sooner rather than later. Now, if it's a manager, or for that matter, a coach whose team's still playing, you won't see it sooner rather than later. But I'll bet you're on to something. This seems like it was the plan, doesn't it? So my question is, what if they had beaten the Dodgers? And what if they beat the Giants and beat the Braves? Do they still fire him? You know, at some point, is it John Mozeliak? I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah, the GM.
Yeah, at some point, he and the owners had to say, okay, here's our plan now. When the season ends, we're making a move. And I'm guessing, well, they won another game. Well, they won another game. Well, they won another game. Oh, boy. Well, they won another game. Well, they won. What are we going to do? Right? But it seems pretty clear to me that at some point, they knew they were doing this, right?
It does. The only other thing that I'll throw out there, and I will admit that it is a long shot of all long shots, but in the nature of how this week has gone in sports, I don't think it can be completely discounted, because different sports tend to have connections that you wouldn't necessarily think of. Could this have anything to do with Bruce Allen's emails?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Maybe could there be something off the field? Yeah, it's something that we're going to find out something about Mike Shield later. It could, but that would surprise me.
It surprised me too.
Yeah. I think you hit it. I wish I had said it. I think they got their guy, because if you didn't have your guy, you wouldn't do it yet, right? I don't know who the guy. I'll bet they got their guy. And it could be the hitting coach in Minnesota. You know, you don't know who it is, but I'll bet you they got their guy. And I'll bet it's either a manager whose contract is up, or somebody's pitching coach whose pitchers lead the league in ERA 5 years in a row. I'll bet they got their guy. Again, because this was just surprising that it happened. This again, if you don't like the way he's managing, I mean this guy was the. Do you realize 2 years ago, before the pandemic season? He was manager of the year. He was the NL manager of the year the last full season before this. And then he just won 17 in a row to end the season. I mean, who fires a guy that the last time you played, I'm not counting last year, the last time you had a 162-game season, he was the manager of the year. And this year, they win 17 in a row to end the season, and we're playing great. And by the way, a lot of people thought they were going to beat the Dodgers. The Dodgers had a two-run home run later. They're still playing. So I'll bet they got their guy.
The other thing, too, that doesn't make sense is, you know, in terms of philosophical differences, well, this is an organization that is always win now and win forever. So I can't imagine there'd be a big, well, you know, we need to start looking at the future and we need to start, you know, maybe tearing some things down, and he didn't want to, you know, go through that. It doesn't. I mean, the St. Louis Cardinals – all they're trying to do is win the next World Series, like right. That, and so it wouldn't. That doesn't strike me as a club where the front office and the manager would be greatly disconnected on the short and long term goals. So what do you think if there's nothing off the diamond with this, what do you think happens to, do you think he bounces back pretty quickly?
He's 53, but he's an old 53. He was an organizational guy. He was Mike Matheny's right hand. Mike Matheny's a good manager. He's the manager of the Royals now. It was somewhat surprising to me that the Cardinals fired Matheny, because I think Gibby, don't you think Matheny's pretty good?
Yeah, and looking at the numbers that Matheny put up, I mean, his winning percentage was about the same as Mike Schilt.
So Matheny's pretty good. And Matheny's a former catcher, now the Royals manager, well-respected. So they fire him in July of 18, and they give Schilt the interim thing just kind of to be a caretaker. He was caretaker guy. And kind of like Doug Marrone, they played pretty well. They said, this guy might be pretty good. So he was never a guy ticketed to be a manager one day. Neither was Brian Snitker, by the way. Gibby, you could tell that story. He's not a guy that was ticketed to be the manager one day. He just did a pretty good job when he got bumped in there.
Yeah, and he's been around the organization for decades.
Right. So that's what this guy, organizational guy that's been around. I'll bet you star name pops up. I'll bet you star name pops up.
I guess
up.
The GM, when he announced it, said we have quality internal candidates. So not to say they're not going to hire outside, but it's interesting that he mentioned that.
I'll bet it's the Kevin Cash type that winds up with this job. I'll bet it's the Rocco Baldelli. Rocco Baldelli was ready. Kevin Cash was ready. Whoever the next ready guy is.
Maybe they're siding with Nate over Ted Lasso.
Maybe that's it. I'm not happy with Nate right now. Nate, I'm not happy with, okay? Did you enjoy the last Ted Lasso?
I did enjoy it.
Did you enjoy the last Ted Lasso?
Am I allowed to say what I didn't like? Do you think everyone's watched it by now?
Is it enough time? Do we need another couple days? We'll wait a couple days.
Right. I'll stay mum.
Ted Lasso is done until until next season. We'll take a break. I want to talk Georgia football after this. Stay with us.
Say to myself, you're such a lucky guy.
Top songs from 1971. I know the song, but I don't know the artist.
It's The Temptations.
Oh, right, okay.
And the song is, you know the song?
I've never heard this song.
This is Just My Imagination?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe right. I have. That sounds familiar.
And once you had said Just My Imagination, I would have told you it was The Temptations.
It is a great song.
It is a great song.
And by the way, one of the reasons, number one, we're celebrating 50 years of
music.
It
picks up in speed here shortly.
I see how much you've heard it. Yeah. One of the reasons is this is about, for me, when I kind of got into music.
Okay.
I wasn't into music as a 10, 9. I watched baseball and sports. I probably started getting into music at 12 or 13. You were probably younger than that when you were like into music.
I was.
How about you?
Yeah, probably like, I think the first album I bought was, I was probably 10.
You were 10. See, I was a little older. I was probably 12 or 13 when I really got into music. And then by 14 was obsessed. Was obsessed with music.
And once it grips you, it never lets go. Speaking of that, before we get to Georgia football, Hayes is going to his first concert tonight at Daly's Place.
How about that?
I'm looking forward to it.
You're
going to
see who?
Yeah, Gene and I are going to go see Three Doors Down.
That's awesome. You'll have a blast.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's a really good concert venue. They did a really wonderful job. And every seat's a good seat, and that's the beauty of it.
So I feel awful that I haven't been. Yeah. I mean, it's just been one of those things that, there are not a lot of acts that, most of the good acts from my day, they're all dead. Yeah. So it's sad, but it's true.
No, I get it.
So, there aren't that many. And the ones that are still alive are pretty big. So, I saw Guns N' Roses, but they played in the arena. I saw the Rolling Stones. Not that the Rolling Stones is my era, but I saw the Rolling Stones, but that was in the stadium.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to it. It's just never – the schedules and the acts have never lined up for me. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But I am very excited to go there tonight.
My wife's never been to Daly's Place. She likes it cool. She doesn't like hot weather, so she doesn't go to a lot. She went to the Stones, the outside, because it was the Stones, and she's not a big concert goer, but God bless her soul, she's been to more with me. She's the only person I know that couldn't name one Springsteen album. That's been to 5 Springsteen shows. She's been to 5. I've been to about 13. She's been to 5 of those 13 with me. So I've been to 8 without her, with the fellas and whatnot. But she's not been to Daly's Place. And so we determined to each other that we missed the boat on Zach Brown, so he'll come back again, and we will be at that one.
Is it surprising that, because you guys love him so much, is it surprising that that's not an arena tour?
He could be. Yeah, I've seen him at the arena before.
Oh, you have?
A couple times, yes.
So he always comes through Jacksonville, and it's just depending on maybe what's available.
I think there's a story that Frank knows as far as like somebody that they're friends with wants him to come.
I won't say all the names, but he is close. He is very close to someone in Jacksonville who certainly is helpful to the Jaguar cause.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and so I think that is part of it.
So. Well, then, so he leaves. I mean, the arena can seat for a concert. Yeah.
I want to say 11 something. Yeah,
but, and Daly's place is how?
5,500.
But I'll say this. If you look at his tour, though, it's not arenas.
I think they like more intimate venues.
Yeah, if you look at it, you look at everywhere. I mean, I've looked at his whole tour.
Yeah.
It's more Daly's places than it is arenas. Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's what he's doing.
But he has played in arenas.
Yeah, right. I'm like
Kenny Chesney has played stadiums, and he plays at Daly's place, too.
Right.
Zach Brown, back-to-back years, played in the arena the Friday night before Florida-Georgia. Correct. In back-to-back years. We went to the first one. We blew off the floor. We did not hold the Florida-Georgia party 1 year to go to the Zach Brown show. And then the next year we were back to having the party, but we did that.
Yeah, so. I don't remember what years those were, but I know I was there for that.
I want to get to Georgia football. I'm going to continue into our next segment because
I wasted so much of your time in this segment.
But let me start this before we get into it. I'm serious about this. So many teams can win national titles. We kid our Georgia friends because it's been so long since they've won one. But for a moment, why haven't they? I mean that. They're a really good program now, and we'll continue this next segment. But this it's got everything you need. It's around the players, great weather, phenomenal high school football in the state of Georgia, close to the players that you can get out of South Carolina and Alabama and certainly Florida where all those players are. It's a little bit odd that they haven't won a national title since 1980. And again, part of it's happenstance. They had a really good team. Was it 11 that they had the great
12.
Team? Was it 12 that they had the really good team? Yeah, was it 12? Okay, so they had really...
They were 12-2 in 2012.
Okay, so they had a really good team.
That was their Enroy team.
Was there an 07 or 08?
But that was a Capital One Bowl team. So.
Yeah, what about 07? What was that? Was that the year?
07, they were 11-2, won the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, so 07...
Then they came into 08, preseason number one.
Yeah, so 7-3, was 03 a good year too for them?
03, they were 11-3, won the Capital One Bowl.
Yeah.
Which back then was the equivalent of winning a New Year's Six.
Yeah, that's right. So... But they've not been able to replicate. They've not been able to go have three or four really good teams in a row. The one thing that Florida did is they bunched all of them together in the 90s. They were going to win a title. And they went to back-to-back title games and won one. Urban did the same thing. 6, 7, 8, 9, he bunched some teams together there, won two titles and had a really good team in 9. Georgia has not been able to group them together.
Isn't the easy answer because of Alabama? Hasn't Alabama stood in their way both of those times?
That's one answer. Yeah, you're right. Maybe Alabama.
I know for sure in 2012 because Georgia came so close to beating Bama.
My point,
a couple years ago.
You're right. That's the first answer. That is an accurate answer. But why weren't they in the mix again in 13 and 14 and 15? That's my bigger question. Is why great and then not so good for a while, then great, then not so good for now he's got it built. See, I think they're going to win. I told you I picked them to win it this year back in spring, and I still think they're going to win it. But because he's built enough. Once you're good enough years, you're going to get one. Kevin O'Sullivan. I'll remember that we sat with him in JU, and we said, are you frustrated you don't have one? He said, we're going to get one. The reason he knew they were going to get one, and he'll get another one too, by the way, is because when you're in the hunt enough, remember when Duke couldn't win one basketball? Duke couldn't win it? Remember that?
Bobby Bowden.
Exactly right. But if you're in there enough, you're going to get a couple of them. Bobby wound up getting two of them. So Coach K started getting a bunch of them. Well, so but the question is, well, I'm going to take a break here, but I want to stay on Georgia. Because they're right up the road. It's a fantastic, it's a great school. It's a great setting. But they have not been able to do it. And I got a bunch of theories. Lauren, you're onto one of them. The resistance is part of this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about the resistance.
Also coach.
And you got to have the right
coach.
Some
people would blame Mark Richt.
Yeah, or Ray Goff or Jim Donnan or whoever. Right. But it's an interesting topic. Let's stay on Georgia football because they're really good, by the way, like really good. And we'll talk about, I mean, is this a generational team? Now, it doesn't look generational because they don't throw it all over the lot like LSU did 2 years ago. But you can be generational different ways. And Nebraska didn't throw it all over the lot in 95 either. They're damn sure generational. So we'll talk more Georgia football. Stay with us. You guys might not love this guy, but I think he's about as good as it gets. Can either one of you guys name who this is?
I cannot yet.
Marvin Gaye?
No, but similar. Okay. Similar. I wonder if y'all know who this is. This is the great Reverend. Does that help at all? If I told you he's a Reverend, he became a Reverend. Didn't do anything for you, huh?
Reverend.
Mark Cohn references him walking in Memphis. Does that help at all? And he calls him by Reverend.
Is it like Otis Redding?
No.
Green?
Al Green.
This is
because
right.
You know Reverend Green from the song.
Correct.
Do you know the name at all? Al Green is.
I do know the name Al Green.
Let's stay together.
But we would have heard this entire song. I
was a gigantic Al Green fan back in the day. Again, based on however old you are, you have periods where music grabbed you and it never let go. You know, like to your point a minute ago, Lauren, it grabbed you. And this was a stretch for me again.
I love listening to a song and it takes you right back to where you were either the first time you heard it or the time that you fell in love with the song.
Did you ever hear of the Nick Saban, Al Green connection?
I do not.
So a reporter asked him years ago, like if you had one, this is back when we played CDs.
Yeah.
If you had one CD or tape in your car and Saban said Al Green.
Is that right?
He said it would be Al Green or Michael Jackson or something like that. But he said Al Green.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he'd be, how old is Saban? 67, 68? What
I think he turned 70 on 70. Halloween.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's
getting ready to turn 70.
Okay. Yeah. So he'd be all over Al Green. I mean, that would have been the era, you know, because if he turned 70, so he's 7 years older than me. So he was born in 51. So he'd have been 20. Yep. He'd have been 20 when all this stuff was coming out.
Yeah, he was putting the moves on Terry with Al Green.
That's exactly
what
he was doing.
Oh, that's exactly right. Let's get into Georgia football for a second. Hey, nobody's followed college football closer than you have since you've been old enough to follow it. Question, I got a lot of theories, but let me start with you. Georgia football's got all the stuff. It looked like in the when Vince Dooley got there, it made him so good in the 70s and early 80s. Man, they were built for the long haul. They won the national title in 80. I will maintain that 80 wasn't a classically great team. Remember, they needed the play of all plays to beat a 7-5 Georgia, 8-4 Florida team. They barely beat Notre Dame. It was Buck Belue, like completed one or two passes. Didn't he barely complete any passes against Notre Dame?
Correct.
They like were 1-7 or something like that. So they barely beat Notre Dame because it was a different time. But they were built and built and built. In your mind, why has it been so many years since Georgia's won? 41 years since Georgia's won a title.
Well, you start with something that no one ever talks about, which is that Vince Dooley, as great as he was, slipped at the end. His last
great
five seasons at Georgia, he lost at least three games every year.
And more, that's a great point.
So, that's a long time. I mean, so five years.
That's when you're only playing 11.
Correct.
You're only playing 11.
So there was a 7-3-2. There was an 8-4. There was a 7-4-1.
Great point.
So the last years,
the recruiting slip too. Probably.
Correct. So the last years of the Dooley era, they weren't as strong. Then they get the coach wrong for the next two. Ray Goff, wrong coach. Jim Donnan, wrong coach. Then they get the coach figured out at least partially with Mark Richt. But a couple things happen. You still have the end of the Spurrier run in Gainesville. So that takes away the first couple of years of the Mark Richt era. Then, to Lauren's point, you're going to have Saban coming online in the conference in 2009. It's a dominant factor. He gets there before 2009. But in 2009 is when Alabama says, our dynasty is now begun, and that dynasty is still ongoing. So you're now dealing with a period of basically 02 to 08 where you're not dealing with Steve Spurrier, you figured out coach, and you're not at Saban yet. The problem that Georgia ran into in those years where that's where you had the rotation of other SEC heavyweights having their turn. You still had some Tennessee, you still had LSU Saban, you still had Les Miles Saban. Or Les Miles Saban, Les Miles LSU,
sure.
And you also had Auburn, that would have you know, have years. So I think it's been somewhat that. I will say they've never been closer than what they are now. You look, to your point, at Georgia in the last 4 years, the bowl games that they have gone to. They won the Rose Bowl, then they lost the national championship game in the same year. They then go to the Sugar Bowl. They then win the Sugar Bowl. They then win the Peach Bowl, which has been elevated in the New Year's Six format, in the playoff format. So they've never been in a position where they've gone to four straight big-time bowl games like they have. So they're right there. I mean, it is absolutely coming for Georgia at some point. If Kirby Smart stays there, there is no reason to think that over the next 10 years, Georgia is not going to win a national title. And it very well may be this season. They are the clear betting favorite. They have a defense that it could be college football's version of the 85 Bears in terms of how it's remembered. And it all lines up for Georgia. The schedule isn't all that daunting. And when you look at it, they basically, with now Auburn out of the way, what does Georgia have to do to win the title? They have to beat Kentucky, who I think they trounce. They have to beat Florida on a neutral site, and they're clearly better. They've got to then beat the West champion, which probably is going to be Alabama still. That's, I think, the hardest remaining game. And then if they see a Cincinnati, Iowa, any team they see from anywhere else outside of the SEC in the playoff, I think they're going to absolutely destroy.
Georgia would have been, if you assume that 10 wins or more gets you into the 12-team college football playoff, they would have been in it 13 times over the last 20 seasons. So they would have had certainly a much clearer path to at least make it a little farther versus the way that we've had it, which is the, you know, originally the BCS and then now the top four teams. But I think our other thing is quarterback. That's what's so interesting about this team this year is I'm not exactly sure which quarterback is going to lead them to the national championship, but moreover, in the years that they've been very, very, very successful, they've had a really, really good quarterback.
I think you're both dead on. Your point about Vince Dooley, Ray Goff started from a lower point than people think. That is a really good point. But, Lauren, I think you hit it. And I think here's the deal. There's two ways to win. Out-quarterback everybody, or be what Nebraska was, where you out-everybody everybody, which is what the mid-90s Nebraska was. They just had more good guys than anybody. If I got more good stuff than anything you got. And so what happened to Georgia? When Ray Goff got there, he had to pick up the pieces a little bit. Remember, his first year was 89. That was his first year. Well, the next year, Spurrier showed up. So he had 1 year without Spurrier. Vince Dooley never had to coach against Spurrier. He had 1 year without Spurrier. But here's what Spurrier had. Shane Matthews, Werfel, Grossman. Later on, Urban had Tebow. Guess what else?
And Leak.
And Leak. Guess what else? Tennessee had Heath Shuler, Peyton Manning in that same stretch. Georgia did not have quarterback play. Back then, you couldn't out-physical and out-athlete everybody. You had to be able to throw it around. Spurrier turned it into a passing league, and Georgia had no passing. David Green was a good college quarterback, but he wasn't great. Eric Zier was a wonderful college quarterback, but he played on teams that didn't have a lot of good players. Aaron Murray had a great year, but none of those guys were elite players. Tim Tebow won the Heisman Trophy. Danny Werfel won the Heisman Trophy. Peyton Manning should have won the Heisman Trophy. Heath Shuler was the second pick in the draft. Rex Grossman went in the first round. I can go on and on.
Stafford was a better pro player than college player.
Yeah, but I forgot about him, though. Stafford's one guy they did have, but he was a better pro player than college. They didn't have that. So I don't think they have it now either. But now they've got Alabama, Nebraska. By the way, Saban didn't have that either. But what Saban did is he built Nebraska of the 90s. So Nebraska of the 90s, which is big, physical, will out everybody you. Spurrier would out quarterback you. Tennessee kind of out quarterbacked you. Now Kirby's built what Nebraska had in the 90s and what Saban's had in the last 5, 6, 7 years, and that's will out everybody you. So I think that's part of it. The other part of it, too, is sometimes it's just bad luck. It's the resistance. You know, I'm sure Ray Goff would tell you. Ray Goff, he and I got to be pretty good friends in the late 80s. I'm sure Ray Goff would tell you what you said, but I never thought of it until you said it. But you made a great point. Georgia was 12-0 national champs in 80, 10-2 in 81, 11-1 in 82 when John Lassiter was the quarterback. 10-1-1 in 83. Man, those are good. Back then, you won 10 or 11, 12 every year. That was really good. But then his Vince Dooley's last 5 years, 7-4-1, 7-3-2, 8-4, 9-3, 9-3. None of those teams were elite. None of them were. The most SEC games they won in that stretch was 5. You know, so none of those teams were elite. So Ray Goff inherited. His first two teams were 6-6 and 4-7. And the year that was a killer for him was 92. Because that's the year he had a better team than Florida and Tennessee and lost to both of them. Do you remember that game? Mm-hmm. That was the year that was the killer. So now all of a sudden Georgia's got this thing built. Now all of a sudden, I saw a stat the other day. Georgia, listen to this stat. Obviously, they've given up like 30 points all year long, right? Georgia, in scoring, of the 130 teams in scoring defense, Georgia's allowing 5.3 points a game. Five.
It's amazing.
Do you know what, without looking it up, Iowa's next, by the way.
I knew that.
Okay, you did? Did you? Okay.
Yes, when you work with someone who's a giant Iowa fan, you know all about Iowa.
What are they allowing? Points per game. Take a shot.
If I guessed it, I'd say 12.8.
Okay. Yeah. That's right. 13.
I was going to say, I would guess 2 touchdowns.
13. Georgia's 2.5 times better. Of the 130 teams halfway through the season, they're 2.5 times better than the second team.
It's amazing.
Think about that for a second. You are 2.5 times better than the next team. There's never been anything like that. Has there?
I would love to know what I'm not counting like 1912
right,
when I think Tennessee posted like 9 shutouts in one season.
Right.
But in terms of like what we would consider the modern era of college football.
Least amount of points allowed.
I'd love to know because they've got to be breaking it.
Yeah, they're 2.5 times ahead of the
in an age where
I
mean it is literally you roll the ball out and score 24.
Yeah, and Tennessee's not getting Kentucky's not getting points against them.
No.
You know? Florida's not beating them. Florida's offense is – Florida didn't score a whole
Florida
lot of
Florida plays games. Emory Jones the whole game, which I'm expecting. It'll probably happen, unfortunately, as much as I'd love to see Mullen throw that as the wrinkle at them. Yeah, I'd be shocked if Florida scores 17.
Yeah, I would think that's probably where you're going to be, 14, 17, 20 at the most. It's not going to be higher than that. But it's amazing how good they've built that thing, and can they keep it going? Because they've done it without elite quarterback play.
They have, but I mean, it's obviously a huge credit to the defense overall. It's not just one aspect of the defense. They have really good pass rush. They also have really good linebackers. They have a really good secondary. And to limit Clemson, who we didn't know at the time was not going to be great shakes, to 3 points, and Auburn, again, not the best team in the SEC by any means, but to 10 points, I mean, that's how you get an average as low as that. Of course, when they play subpar teams, they're going to hopefully shut them out.
2 weeks sent me a text, got me thinking, he's right. What if Fields wins the job over Fromm? Do they have a title? They may not.
I'm trying to think of
3 years ago.
So that would have been last year. They were 8-2 last year.
But it would have been 19. He would have won the job, right?
So that would have been against
LSU. 19 was the year where Fields, I think, had the 41-1 or something like that.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the case they were 12-2 that year.
They were in 2019. They weren't beating LSU though.
Yeah. So. Well, that's right. Good point. They were very good point.
Yeah.
They weren't. No matter Fran Tarkenton could come back. They weren't.
They did get destroyed in that game.
Yeah, that's a good. That's a very
good
point.
I would say no. Probably. Not.
Final thoughts. We go to break here. So I got looking at these defensive stats. Let me throw this at you. Points allowed per game. Okay. There's 130 exactly 130 FBS teams. That's the numbers. 130. Florida State and Miami. Dominant programs from 87 through early 2000s. Florida State, 14 straight top four finishes.
Get any athlete you want.
Any athlete you want. You can talk all you want about my friend Gino Toretta and Vinny Testaverde and Charlie Ward. They're great, great offensive players. But what the signature of most of those two teams were defensive NFL guys, right? And again, they had great offensive players, but the signature was defensive guys. Let me ask you a question without either one of you looking it up. Of the 130 division of the 130 FBS teams. If you already looked it up, that's okay.
No.
Of the 130 FBS teams, Georgia's number one in scoring defense. Florida, in case you're wondering, is 12. Okay.
Florida's 12th in scoring defense. That's higher than I would have thought.
So Georgia's one, Florida's 12. Okay. The scoring defense. Okay. Florida State in Miami, off the top of your head. Florida State in Miami, of the 130, where do you think they are?
I will guess by your tone that Florida State is 87 and Miami is 91.
I'll guess they're both in the hundreds.
I would have guessed 75 and 80, 92 and 98.
Wow.
In the country.
That is amazing.
There's 130 teams. Florida State University, where Bulwer and Wilson and they all and Marvin Jones and Derek Brooks, and they all played in Wadsworth. Miami with Ed Reed and Jerome Brown and Stubbs and I go all
Zapp,
day.
Yeah, Zapp, yeah. I mean, Vilma.
92 and 98 in the country.
It's remarkable.
Halfway through the season. I wouldn't have – even knowing they're struggling, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
I mean, that is –
And where would FSU be without Jermaine Johnson, the transfer? Yeah.
Who's probably like who's a top 10 pick now.
Right. One of their – obviously their best players.
What if Georgia still had him, by the way?
Yeah, you know? They didn't need him.
Yeah, no, they didn't. Yeah, we maybe wouldn't play. So interesting stuff. All right, more in a moment. This is 1010 XL 92.5 FM. She's a lady. Let me tell you this, Hayes Carline. If you thought we were looking at the year 1971 AD and you weren't getting Tom Jones,
right.
You probably didn't think it through, did you? Probably didn't think it through, did you, bro?
Oh, man. I tell you, of all the people that have walked this earth,
yeah.
I wouldn't mind trading my life for Tom Jones'
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Who wouldn't want to be Tom Jones? You kidding me? Love Tom Jones.
I appreciate you dedicating this song to me.
Yeah,
no question. You.
I can tell you this: the the late '60s, early '70s, know this: the Little League / youth hoops / youth football / patrol boys moms. Love them some Tom Jones.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
You're probably too young to appreciate this, but they love them some Tom Jones.
Absolutely.
I mean, love them some Tom Jones.
There's a natural question I have to ask. Is that a song that would have been played at the Ramada?
No, it was a little earlier.
Okay.
The Ramada, we pretty much, we were contemporaries.
Okay.
So the Ramada, we didn't play old stuff.
Because that, I feel
like,
would have been perfect.
Good point. The Ramada, remember.
You pick
now,
out a girl, you tell her this song's for you.
Remember, the Ramada was mid 75, right. 74, 75, 76.
So many years later.
Yeah, we played contemporary stuff. There was a lot of KC, there was a lot of Bee Gees.
Right.
There was a lot
I just
of,
feel like that.
There were some Commodores.
Would have fit.
You don't think Lionel Richie showed up at the Ramada,
right.
You'd be wrong. Okay.
If Tom Jones made the claim that Wilt Chamberlain made, I would not be the least bit surprised.
So true. So 100% true. So let me ask you a question. You don't care about hockey, right?
I do not.
I don't. Do you care about hockey, Brooks?
Hayes only cares about football. We know this.
Yeah, sure.
I do not care about hockey.
Give me any part of you a hockey fan?
No, my dad's a big Carolina Hurricanes fan, but I've just never gotten into it.
I could care less about it, okay? God bless my friend Jessica Blaylock, who will always text me when the Pittsburgh Penguins do something, and I appreciate it very much. But I don't even know the players' names, you know, so I'm not a.
It's a regional thing for the most part. Yeah. I feel like if you're born and raised in the South, you're probably not as big of a hockey fan as if you're from the North.
Right, and Blaylock, to her credit, she's a Boston fan because her dad's from Beverly, Massachusetts, but she became a hockey fan because Blue would always talk about the Bruins. And so she became a Bruins fan because she would hear Blue talk about it. And it was kind of a cool thing.
And hockey can be a really fun sport to watch.
And so she became a Bruins fan because Blue was always talking about it. And then she and O'Halloran and Blue would go watch like the games at Blue's sports, Blue's house. And she became a legitimate hockey fan because she heard a buddy of hers talking about the Bruins. So she became this legitimate Bruins fan because talked about it. And then of course, now the Panthers, who she covers. So, but I've tried, and I joke about it. If the Penguins are ever any good, if they're like in the Stanley Cup Finals, I'll wait till like the last four games until I'm a hockey fan. But I don't. But I'm not into it, right? But I'm not really into it. But now, hockey made a huge mistake by leaving ESPN. They was it 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever. They were on ESPN, and they left, and everyone said that's the biggest mistake. To your point, Lauren, it's regional, and so if you leave ESPN, which is what everybody watched 15 years ago, well before Major League Network and NFL, that really was what everybody watched. At least now they can break off a little bit to the sports networks. You're making this gigantic mistake by leaving ESPN, and it was a death knell for hockey. And NBC did a great job with it, and NBC Sports Network and wherever the hell else it showed up, they did a good job with it, everybody says. But they weren't on ESPN. Well, this year is the first
time since 04.
Is it 04? Is that okay? Yeah. So it's almost 20 years. So now they're back on ESPN and TNT, I think. I think it's ESPN and TNT, which people watch. I think going back to ESPN will really reignite or ignite, maybe not even reignite, fans following hockey. I'll bet you see that. It didn't happen with soccer because it wasn't going to happen with soccer. But there's a lot of the country that really cares about hockey. And hockey now is everywhere. It's just not played everywhere in the youth level or whatnot. I'll bet you, and I may be wrong about this, but I'll bet you people start watching, even people like me, maybe us, watch hockey more than they have because it's on ESPN. I agree or disagree. I'm not saying it's going to take over the world. I think it's going to dent. I think there's going to be more of it.
If we have a loser Monday on it, I will watch hockey.
Well, for sure.
If we do not, I probably won't.
Maybe I won't, but I just think some people
will.
Well,
I agree with you in terms of the NHL and its partnership with ESPN.
What were they thinking?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be so beneficial for hockey. So I get what you're saying. It's the sport now has such a greater chance to add to its following. But I mean, there's zero chance that I will ever become a hockey fan. Like, zero chance. But, you know, for others that are younger, you know, perhaps.
Have you taken your kids to an Iceman game?
We have, because Avery sang the national, not her, like, group.
Right.
Sang the national anthem, so we went for that, and it was great.
Did they enjoy it?
They did enjoy it, and I'd absolutely go back for that.
Different
than I'm going to sit down on my couch and watch Flyers versus Avalanche. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
for
but
2.5-3 hours.
I think kids who go to hockey games are then, if they go home and it's on ESPN, all of a sudden you may end up with a generation that becomes diehard hockey fans because here's the sport that they got connected to locally, but they ended up being, you know, able to watch it much more easily. So I don't know that you're going to convert adults who are not hockey fans to hockey fans just because it's on ESPN.
And I don't think you're going to convert tons of people, but I guess get this sense that more people are going to watch. There's a part of me that thinks hockey has been on the cusp a little bit, even though it's been around forever. There's a part of me that thinks there's something. We'll see. We'll see if it happens. I can remember in 2004 doing radio and thinking, what are you thinking by leaving? And I didn't remember what year it was, but I can remember sometime somewhere along the line doing radio thinking and saying on air, I'm not much of a fan. This is a death knell for your sport. Your sport's trying to gain traction with all these other sports. Why in the world would you ever leave ESPN? And again, remember, there was no Major League Network. There was Major MLB Network. There was no NFL Network. There was no SEC Network. So you guys know that. In the 90s and 2000s, everybody watched ESPN all the time. That's why SportsCenter and The Big Show blew up the way they did, because you watched nothing else. And so I'll be interested to see. I get this hunch that I may turn it on here or there.
Hockey, to me, is a sport. It is so much fun to watch in person.
It's way better in person.
And if you're someone like me that doesn't have the best eyesight, trying to follow the puck on TV is not ideal. One quick question for you, Frank. So you can become a legitimate fan of a team just by adopting them. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes.
Earlier. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think if you adopt them for the right reasons.
Okay.
I think,
the right reasons. Got it.
I say that's exactly right. Like, I thought you were a legitimate Pirates fan.
Okay.
Okay? I thought that was legit. So, is that a good example?
That's a good example.
Okay. She's kind of got me in the corner, so I'm trying to scramble my out of here, okay? Okay, I'm looking at them, seeing if I have any timeout. Do I have any timeouts left here? We'll take a break. When we come back, Jimmy Heim checks in, talking SEC football. Oh, Steve Carline, where is he right now?
He's already texted, and I have informed him. Jimmy Himes comes on at 5. He also asked me if Gene and I were still going to London, so I obviously need to update my dad on my life a little bit better, because it's been about 3 months since I found out. Yeah, I'm not going to London this year.
By the way, to that end, I probably have thanked 10 friends for wishing me a safe trip, okay, and then told all of them we are not going. We are calling this game remotely. So Jimmy Himes is next. Stay with us.
Time now for Jimmy Himes, talking SEC football, brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
It is time to talk SEC football. Jimmy Himes joins us from the Sports Animal in Knoxville, Tennessee. Jimmy, how are you, man?
Frank, I'm doing fantastic. How you doing?
I am doing well, and we got a lot to talk about because it's now official. Alabama's not unbeatable. I wasn't sure who was going to get them next, if anybody. How surprised were you that Texas A&M won on Saturday night?
Very. If you'd asked me in October whether or not A&M could beat Alabama, I'd say yes. You asked me the week of the game after Texas A&M lost to Arkansas and got manhandled up front, lost to Mississippi State to a 400-yard passing attack, no way. And with a backup quarterback. Very impressive what A&M did. Guys, they finally played the way I thought they could. Although Calzada, the quarterback, played way above what I thought he was capable of. That was impressive what he was able to do. And it was impressive that A&M, after having the lead, lost the lead, and then came back and took the lead and won it. I thought that was a heck of a performance by the Aggies.
You know, it's interesting too, Jimmy, not only about A&M, but about Alabama. Florida almost beat them. That game came down to a missed extra point.
Yeah.
And Florida's good. They're far from great. It's a good Florida team. It's not an elite Florida team by any stretch. So I wonder if Alabama is off a little bit. They lose a bunch of guys every year. I guess what I took out of that is they are more human maybe than we realized, right?
Yeah, I think they are more human. And look, they've lost a lot of good players through the years. They've never lost three of the top five Heisman Trophy candidates.
Correct.
I mean, that's a huge impact. And while they're really good, I don't think they're quite as good at quarterback, although Bryce Young's really good. I don't think that they're quite as good as running back, although Brian Robinson's really good. And I don't think they got a receiver as good as Devontae Smith. And now, defensively, I thought they'd be better. That's a little bit where I missed the mark. I thought that their defense would stand out better than they have. They've had some injuries on defense, but still, I thought Alabama would be a contender for the national title. Offense not quite as good, defense better. The sum of the parts would be that Alabama would be right in contention again, and they still may be. I'm not ruling them out. Nick Saban's won 7 national championships, 5 of them with a 1-loss team. So I'm not ruling them out, but they are not as good as they were a year ago.
Speaking of defense, this is a pretty amazing stat. Georgia's got the best defense in the country. I don't think anybody would debate that. Georgia's
right.
Scoring defense, they're allowing 6 games in, they've allowed about 30 points for the year. They're allowing 5.5 points a game. That is 2.5 times better than anybody else. I think Iowa's next at around 13. That's one of the most amazing stats I think I've ever seen halfway through a season, Jimmy. They're that good on defense.
You know, I thought Georgia would have the best defense in the league, but not by much. I thought Alabama and A&M would contend with Georgia. I was wrong. Now, Georgia also lost about 5 starters on that defense.
Right.
But my goodness, they replaced him with a bunch of 5-star guys. And when you look at N'Kobe Dean, and when you look at Jordan Davis, and you look at Wyatt and some of these guys they got, they're amazing. They are absolutely amazing. A year ago, Alabama led the SEC in defense and points allowed per game at 19. And you're telling me Georgia's at, what, 5.3 or whatever they are?
Right.
That's incredible. That's almost 4 times better than the best scoring defense of a year ago. Now, the season's not over. There may be a game where they give up 13, Frank. Look out.
Is this, you know, you and I have covered this league a long time. A long time. We both have. And I was in school, Jimmy, when Georgia won the national title in 1980. I covered it and followed it as a student. Is this the best? And I know it's early. You're right. And there's a lot of football to be played. I get it. They still got to play Tennessee, who looks like a way better team than I thought. They got to play Florida. They're going to have to play an SEC championship game. So there's a lot of football. I get it. But 6 games in, is this the best Georgia team you've seen?
It's very close. I remember 1980 with Herschel Walker, and they won the national championship.
Right.
And they were still really good in 1981 and 82 with Herschel Walker.
Right.
And they've had some really good teams. Now, this is the first time they've been ranked number one during the regular season since 1982.
Right.
I'm going to hold back a little bit on the best I've ever seen. I want to see what happens at quarterback. Stetson Bennett versus JT Daniels. I think they need Daniels back to play at an optimum level. But right now, they look pretty darn good. I mean, they're the best team in the country that I've seen so far this year. We'll see if that continues.
Let's do a little bit of a hot seat check. How hot is the seat for Ed Orgeron? And he's 8-8 since winning the national title. We all know the numbers. Got just absolutely rolled by Kentucky, which you don't get rolled by Kentucky if you're LSU. I don't care how good Kentucky is. If Florida beats him, could he get fired midseason?
I don't know about during the season, but the seat is so hot that if you gave him a bowl of gumbo, he could not sit down to eat it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, he could not. It is, and we've had a beat writer on from LSU. He is convinced that Orgeron will not be back next year. He was projecting them to go 6-6. I don't know if they can go 6-6. They've had another player that is hurt out for the year, a cornerback named Eli Ricks. Derek Stingley hadn't played the last couple of games. Now, against Kentucky, they did finally find a semblance of a run game, but they've had so many. Kayshon Booty, the receiver's out for the year. I don't think Ed Orgeron's going to be the coach at LSU next year.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see. All right, let's get to the games. So we've got all 14 teams are playing a conference game. I'm going to go right in order based on what time the games start. We got three of them at noon, so let's get right to it. We'll pick the games today. Auburn plays at Arkansas. Arkansas looked great, maybe not quite as good as we thought. Same with Auburn. Georgia really rolled them last week. I was surprised that margin of victory was so big. Auburn at Arkansas. Jimmy, who do you like in this game?
I like Arkansas. KJ Jefferson's playing really well. They got a great receiver in Treylon Burks. They've got some good running backs. Auburn's a little bit too inconsistent for me. I think it'd be a close game. I do wonder how much starch was taken out of that Arkansas team by losing that 52-51 game to Ole Miss.
Right.
But I think Arkansas is just a better team right now. I'm going to go with the Hogs.
The A&M plays at Missouri. Road game after big home win at night, gigantic home win at night. This game has letdown written all over it. But I don't know that Missouri's good enough to take advantage of letdown week. What do you see here?
I think A&M wins it. I do agree with you. I think it'd be a letdown week. It's not going to be the blowout. They're not going to beat them the way Tennessee beat them. I'm reminded that A&M went to Colorado and had to score with 3 minutes left to win a game against a bad Colorado team. I do expect A&M to have a slow start, but I think Missouri is so bad that it's not going to matter. And I think A&M, look, Missouri's run defense is pathetic. A&M will be able to run at will against them. So I see A&M winning, but I see them getting off to a slow start.
The other noon game is Florida at LSU. Interesting game. Last time they played at LSU, Florida was supposed to lose and found a way to win that game. That was the hurricane game played in December or late in the season. Florida's still seething about that shoe throw game. LSU's not very good, but but I don't know that Florida's great offensively either. Can LSU hang around? What happens here?
I think Florida wins this football game. I just mentioned the injuries that LSU has had. And although I think Max Johnson's a nice quarterback, you take away his best receiving threat. And then Florida's going to run all over. But Kentucky ran for 330 yards.
Right.
And I don't think Kentucky's a better running team than Florida.
Right.
Especially with Emory Jones running the football. So I'm going to take LSU. I'm going to take Florida to beat LSU. And part mainly because of the running game of the Gators.
All right, Georgia is at home against Kentucky. Gosh, this is 1-11, and Kentucky's had a wonderful year, best start in forever for them. And man, I feel like Georgia's going to roll them at 3:30. What do you think?
I think Georgia beats them. I think Kentucky can hang with them for a little while. Kentucky's really good at the line of scrimmage. I think they're underrated at the line of scrimmage. That's offense and defense, and they do run the ball very well. But you're not going to run it on Georgia. I don't care how good your running game is. You're not going to run it on Georgia. So I see Georgia winning. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. I'll go Georgia 27-10.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's going to be more than two touchdowns. But you're right. It could be low-scoring. I think maybe a little bigger than that. We'll see. All right. Now, Vanderbilt and South Carolina play. They're both lousy. They both have first-team coaches, Clark Lee and Shane Beamer. Jimmy, did they inherit situations that are worse than people thought? I mean, Vanderbilt's not been a good team, but I don't remember them being this bad. And in South Carolina, same thing. Tell me what you think of both programs and what those coaches inherited, and who do you think is going to win this game?
Well, Vanderbilt was the worst situation. They just don't have any players. They got a quarterback, a receiver. That's about it. South Carolina had more talent because they do have some good defensive players. But the Vanderbilt's the worst situation. South Carolina's next. I wasn't surprised that Tennessee whipped South Carolina. I picked them by 18. They won by 25. But I think those were the worst jobs that were inherited by those coaches. And but I think South Carolina, is it possible for both teams to lose? No, I guess not. I will take South Carolina to win. Here's the thing. South Carolina can run the football with some degree of success. And so I think that'll get them over the hump. They'll beat Vanderbilt. I actually don't think it'll be very close.
Yeah, by the way, Tennessee beat them by 25. I thought Tennessee took the foot off the gas in that game. I thought they were more than 25 points better than them, I thought, watching the game.
They were.
Alabama plays in Starkville. People don't realize these two cities are about 40 minutes apart. They're the two closest cities in the SEC, Starkville and Tuscaloosa. Alabama lost, and they've got to be seething. Mississippi State can be sneaky good at times. It's a night game in Starkville. What happens here?
I actually think Alabama's going to beat them pretty good. Okay. I'll give Mississippi State credit for the one-loss record that they have. I think Will Rogers is one of the most improved quarterbacks in the league, but I just don't see them hanging with Alabama. I think Alabama will rush three. They'll drop eight. That's the MO to try to stop the offense of Mississippi State. I think Alabama wins by three touchdowns.
And the best game of the weekend, I think, in the SEC, Ole Miss travels to Tennessee, 7:30 game. Ole Miss is ranked. Tennessee is not. But, oh, boy, I think this is a good ball game along the Tennessee River there. Who do you like here?
Ole Miss beat Arkansas 52-51. Oh. There's a chance we will see a similar score. I saw the over-under at 82. I'm going over.
Wow.
I think Ole Miss wins it because of Matt Corral. I think he's the best quarterback in the league. I think Bryce Young is second. And I think that in Tennessee, this is hard to believe, but first off, they lost 44 potential players from last year's team. They had 10 guys that didn't play against South Carolina. 10. And they still did that. I give Tennessee a lot of credit. I think that the lack of depth catches up to them. I think Ole Miss gets the win 45-38.
All right. I think Tennessee's going to beat Ole Miss. And I think Tennessee is going to put a scare into somebody, whether it's Georgia, whether it's Alabama, Kentucky, who they might be favored against. If I drank the Kool-Aid too much on this Tennessee team, because I really like them. Am I too over the top, do you think? What do you think about this team?
I don't think they can put a scare into Georgia or Alabama. I think they have the potential to beat Ole Miss. I wouldn't have said that in August.
Yeah.
But I feel that way now. And they have the potential to beat Kentucky. I think they have a better chance to beat Kentucky because Kentucky's offense is not as explosive as Ole Miss's. But I do think this was a team I thought they'd go 6-6. I had them at 4-10, Frank, but they're a better 4-2. I'm sorry, 4-2 right now. But they're a better 4-2 team than I thought because their offense is better and their run defense is better. Having said that, I think you may have them. You've got them rated a little higher than I do. Because I do see some defensive flaws. They're not very good at stopping a mobile quarterback.
Yeah.
And offensively, their offensive line's not very good. That might surprise you, but when you look at them individually, they're just not that good. And so I think they can have offensive lulls like they did in that second half against South Carolina. And I agree. I think they took their foot off the gas a little bit. But this is a much better Tennessee team than I thought. I think Josh Heupel and his staff have done a terrific job with this team.
Yeah, I do too. And you know them better than I do. I just think that style of play is confounding some teams. Teams have played tempo, but they haven't played like that. Teams have played with tempo in the SEC, but not that kind of tempo. And so we'll see what happens. It's going to be a great week in the SEC, man. All 14 teams playing SEC games. Jimmy Himes from the Sports Animal in Knoxville, Tennessee. Nobody does it better. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Frank.
Back in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Bet you know this one, Hayes Carlion. Keep listening.
I don't yet.
You're going to know this one. Obviously, you know the band.
I'm a little nervous at just throwing out words like obviously on this.
How about it?
This is the Who?
Of course it is.
Okay.
Yeah, you know the Who? Hayes Carlion knows the Who. Yeah. I pretty much know bands you're going to know and not know.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, you'll know the Who, okay? Don't Get Fooled Again, you know what?
I do.
Good song.
You like I loved the song before that you played leading into Jimmy Himes. Joan Baez's cover of
These are songs from 1971, 50 years ago. You like The Who?
I do like The Who, but I don't know a lot of their stuff.
Yeah, me
like,
too. When I know the hits. I know the
yeah,
hits.
I mean, the song that they have that I love, and I can never remember the...
Bob O'Reilly?
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. I think that's one of the best great openings in rock. So, yeah, and when I hear them on like classic rerun channels, I like it. Yeah. I just don't know enough. But I do like what I... Yeah, from what I hear, I love.
And I'm like you. I know the hit. I know there's a lot of bands, and I know their hits. I couldn't tell you one deep cut from them. And The Who is in that category. So sorry. There you go. So 1971. Who do you want to win tonight?
You know, part of me wants the Dodgers because you want revenge from last year because
you want to beat that ass, is what
right.
you're saying.
Yeah.
I get it.
And but then the other half of it is the Giants have some players that the Braves have a lot of familiarity with. Kevin Gausman played for the Braves. Pretty sure the Braves drafted Alex Wood back in the day. So there's guys on that roster that they're very familiar with. So I would probably say Giants, but man, I'd love to beat the Dodgers and get some revenge on them.
Brooks, you back to watching baseball? Or you're still banned?
I'm not going to watch it, but I'll watch football tonight. But I want the Giants to win.
Okay, so
you want the Giants to win?
I do.
Because your dad's a Giants fan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a rooting interest?
Duh. I have a few. I mean, this is who my team plays next.
Well, let me rephrase.
I am so deeply wounded by that question.
Yeah, you're right. Your beloveds play next. Good. Well said. Yeah, yeah. He can. He's allowed to adopt and readopt a team. Okay. He's like readopted his team. Okay.
I watched Rafael Ramirez play.
Yeah.
I can absolutely jump back on the Braves bandwagon whenever I choose. I think you have to. To me, I think home field means a lot. In this, the Braves have unbelievable fan support. I think they were second or third in attendance this
second.
Year. Second. So to me, I think that environment does play such a role in the postseason. So I'm hoping the Dodgers win. I think the Dodgers are probably more talented. Although it's obviously close with how magnificent the Giants have been this year. But I think if you're the Braves, you'd love to have the home field edge. So I'm pulling for the Dodgers. It's a tepid pick because I want the deciding game to be in Atlanta if necessary.
Makes perfect sense to me. When it comes to Corey Knebel versus Logan Webb, who's better?
Yeah, well, Webb's a starting pitcher. Knebel, I think it's called.
Knebel. Yeah, it's Knebel. He's a reliever.
Knebel's a short reliever.
He's an opener.
He was the Brewers' closer. He was the Brewers' closer for, what, 3-4 years, right, Gibby?
And then he had Tommy John.
Yeah, and so Corey Knebel he's an opener, which makes no sense. They've got Urias available, and they're starting an opener, which I hate that. Why? I mean,
I love to see it. Yeah, I want to see him play an extra game.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't.
I don't get it either.
They're starting Corey Knebel, who is a closer and was a good closer for the Brewers, and now he's a reliever. Logan Webb is a legitimate starter who's pretty good now. By the way, he went that first game. He beat him. Did he pitch the 1-0 game? Or
yeah, he was lights out.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the 1-0 game. He pitched one of them.
They're saying Urias will come in after.
Yeah.
So Knebel's basically an opener.
Yeah, it's just a strategy.
Isn't it dumb? I mean, again, did baseball really get it wrong the first 157 years, and now these guys have figured it out? Is that what happened?
That is not what happened.
But guys don't go as long. I mean, obviously they don't pitch as many innings as they once did.
No, they don't. You're right. And I hate that too. That's what one thing I love about Super 70 Sports. He'll say, that's his biggie.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
one of his biggies. Bob Gibson threw 148 pitches, you know, never had Tommy John.
He even put up a group of guys the other day. It was a rotation for, I can't remember, maybe the A's. But none of the guys were stars
right.
to me. But he was pointing out that year, of these five guys, they had like some incredible right. amount of complete games.
Yeah, now I will tell you this.
And it wasn't like from the 40s. From the 60s or 70s,
But I'll tell you this.
Think.
The one A's team, not the good A's, not the Vita Blue Catfish Hunter A's. I'll bet you the team you're talking about, Rick Langford.
That sounds right.
Yeah, but and that's what started it all because they all kind of had arm trouble after that. But they all pitched forever. It was,
okay.
Was Billy Martin there then? Maybe a name. Or,
it was no one that
it
I
wasn't Dick Williams anymore. Some name recognized. Manager. A name manager. I think it might have been Billy Martin.
Oh, he probably went in the picture then.
Yeah, yeah. Because
it was just the group.
But it was Rick
pitchers.
Langford and those guys. I know who it was. It was Mike Norris.
See, that'd be a guy I would not know.
Mike Norris, Rick Langford. I'll look it up.
It wasn't that long. He tweeted it a couple days ago.
But it was a but anyway, yeah. So, but the whole opener thing.
Let me ask you this. So, from your perspective, and you're welcome to join the Braves.
Yeah.
By the
okay.
way.
Oh, you know what? I'll entertain that. Yeah, up until today, I might have. Right. I had to listen to relive Sid Bream again.
Right. You don't have to pull for us today.
Okay.
But if you were a Braves fan, would you like the Dodgers having to play a deciding game 5 on Thursday and then go all the way to Atlanta for a Saturday game 1, or does it not really matter?
If I was a Braves fan, I would be rooting for the Giants because at the end of the day, I think the Dodgers have the best team. Lauren, you found it. It's Rick Langford, Mike Norris. I don't know the other three. Tell me the other three.
Brian Kingman.
Correct.
Steve McCaddy.
Correct.
And Matt Keough.
Matt Keough. Okay, but they like blew their arms, didn't they?
That I don't know from the picture.
But the picture you just pulled up is the year. Those are the five guys, and they pitched like complete games all the time, but it was
complete games by the A's in 1980-94.
Was Billy Martin the manager? Is he the one that – but he got criticized for all that. But anyway, I think Billy Martin was the manager. But anyway, thanks for pulling that up. If I was a Braves –
it was Billy Martin, yes.
Yeah, and he got really criticized for that. If I was a Braves fan, I would want the Giants to win because I think the Dodgers have the best team. That's Gibby, you don't agree with that, though. I mean, you're a Braves – you guys are – You're
well,
almost
he's
the right
bringing
you're
up the revenge factor, which I don't really care about. But to me, it's more about where the games will be.
Yeah, yeah, good. Now, Gibby just made that point. Gibby said you have home field if it's the Dodgers. I just think the Dodgers have the better team. And by the way, will Muncy be back? Because he changes them, man. Is Muncy supposed to come back or no?
I haven't heard. I haven't heard if he's supposed to be back or not. We'll see.
Very small chance Max Muncy returns for potential NLCS.
Oh, very soon. So unlikely. Okay.
That was earlier today that Dave Roberts said that.
Okay, then that's – okay, it's very unlikely.
Well, keep in mind, the Braves took 2 out of 3 at home against the Dodgers in the first week of June. So yeah. I don't care. If they play the Braves – I mean, if they play the Dodgers in its home field, bring it on.
Yeah, yeah.
The Braves are the underdog regardless, correct?
Well, record-wise, for sure.
But Vegas will favor
– the other team.
Whoever wins tonight.
Yeah, the Braves will be the official bookie underdog, correct. I will say this.
That's just the way we like it.
The Braves are playing as well as anybody right now. So, one thing about baseball, you could be playing great. It was the, who was it? Not that many years ago, was like the Braves under 500 in July, Gibby, like you were saying. Somebody, was it the Nationals, Gibby?
Yes.
They
were like 16-31. That's
right. And they won the World Series.
And they won the World Series.
That's right.
I mean, they were 15 under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then came back and won the World Series because they got so it's who and right now the Braves are playing like that. So
that was that Howie Kendrick year. Yeah. They hit the big homer in the NLCS.
Yeah, but they were 15 under at one point and then got hot as heck and beat everybody. So
by the way, the guy pitching tonight for the Giants, Logan Webb. It was last Friday. He went 7 2/3 and struck out 10 beat the Dodgers 4-0.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. If the Dodgers played and I may be dead wrong. If the Dodgers play, despite home field, if the Dodgers play the Braves, I would pick the Dodgers to beat the Braves again. If the Giants play the Braves, I would pick the Braves to win.
Really?
So, yeah, I would pick the Braves because I think the Braves are really playing well right now. And again, that sounds dumb. The Giants won 107 games. I mean, at some point, maybe they are better than I. 107 games in a really hard division. That's a lot of wins, you know. So, but I would pick just because the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers they've been to 4 straight World Series. You know, I mean, they're really, and they've added Max Scherzer. I mean, so in a longer series, they've got a lot of pitching, and they've got. I mean, the only reason I think the Braves could beat either one of these two teams is because the Braves have caught fire and the Braves are playing at a great level. And so we'll see what happens.
Gibby, will the pitching rotation be the same as it was before Fried, Anderson, and then Morton?
Yeah, it'll be those three. Those are the top three guys. And I think, honestly,
three pretty good ones too now. That's pretty good.
The thing that the Braves didn't have last year was a proven postseason winner. And that's what Charlie Morton is. And look, Max Fried has shown he can stand up in a big game. And so has Ian Anderson. But last year, they didn't have a guy like Charlie Morton that has – I mean, Charlie Morton's pitched in some of the biggest games in postseason history. I saw an incredible stat that he's like 4-0 in do-or-die games in the postseason or something crazy. But the bottom line is they haven't had a guy like him, and now they do.
Yeah, he was on at Pirate staff, and those good years. He was on the Pirates staff for the good years. He was on the Rays staff for the great year last year, and he's on the Braves staff now. He's a, by the way, he's a cool guy. Have you ever heard, read the stories about, you know, he's drafted by the Braves.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And the Braves traded him to the Pirates for
Nate McClouth.
Well, he and two other guys for Nate McClouth. Who was an outfielder for the Pirates. Charlie, he plays guitar. Do you know all this, Gibby?
He plays
guitar. He's just laid back,
very
easygoing guy. And he always had great stuff, but he never threw that power sinker. And then he was watching Roy Halladay. And Roy Halladay, the late Roy Halladay, threw this power sinker. And then Morton started throwing that and became this magically good pitcher. And they compared him to Halladay. And Halladay was kind of honored that they're comparing this younger guy, who's 36 now, but he wasn't that much younger, so to Halladay.
What's your early thought on the ALCS?
I can't wait to watch it. The Astros have a really good team. I'm kind of rooting for the Red Sox just because I think, I don't know, I just think I just kind of am. But I think the Astros are going to the World Series. What do you think, Gibby?
Yeah, I mean, you just look up and here they are again, the Astros. Yeah,
they're really good.
It is amazing. And you know, Hinch was a great manager, but look, the core they have with Bregman and some of these guys are going to be gone, by the way.
All of them.
Yeah, I mean, they're just a really good team. But I think the Astros, but look, I mean, we talk about teams getting hot. Well, the Red Sox are pretty hot.
Yeah, the Red Sox are not better than the Rays. They were hotter than the Rays. You know, that's the thing. So they just beat a team that I don't think they were better than. So they might beat another team that I don't think they're better than.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox win.
Yeah, I think they could. I mean, they're playing really well right now. I mean, so they really could. I tell you what, it's been a good postseason. It's already been a good postseason. It's going to be a great World Series no matter who's in it. I mean, here's what you know. Once upon a time, the Brooklyn Dodgers, the New York Giants, and the Boston, then Milwaukee Braves were three of the greatest franchises in baseball. One of them is going to be in the World Series. They're just in a different city. They're all in different cities now. But one of those are going to be in the World Series.
None of the five options are bad.
Right, right. And Boston Red Sox are one of the most heritage franchises. The only franchise left that's not a big name franchise is the Astros, and they have a really good team.
They have the villainy thing.
They're the cheating villains.
Yeah, that you draw in some casual fans. So ratings wise, I would think Major League Baseball has to be pretty excited.
Darn right they are.
No matter where this goes,
they're big markets, big teams, heritage. Yeah, you know, I completely agree with you. So it's been a great postseason. We'll take a break. One final segment. We'll talk a little more Jaguars football. Stay with us.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step.
If it was up to me, I would let the song play the entire time.
I can't remember
the
plane
song written about the plane crash with Richie Valens,
Buddy Holly.
Is there somebody else?
Big Bopper.
And Big Bopper, right, of course. And one of the most classic American songs of all time. I
iconic
absolutely love
song.
The song.
Iconic song.
Yes, absolutely iconic. So top songs from 1971, well done. It's been a lot of fun. And I have a question for all of you when it comes to head football coaches' salaries. We know Nick Saban's going to be one. Ed Ogeron right now is listed at two. Of course, he got a big deal right after he won the national championship. Whether or not he gets to keep his job is, I think, something he has to be concerned with. Dabo Swinney, Clemson, three makes sense. But David Shaw, Stanford, is fourth on the list, making almost $9 million ahead of Lincoln Riley, Dan Mullen, Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart, James Franklin, and Ryan Day.
The main reason for that, I didn't know, that shocks me. I would have never known he made that kind of money, is because the NFL has come calling three times at least.
Mm-hmm.
At least the 49ers came calling. Was it the Chargers that came calling? Who else? I think
Arizona.
Arizona. He's had like three offers, not just courtships. Everybody thought David Shaw was going to wind up in the NFL, and still might, by the way. But that's
that
so
is
your point's a very good one. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that at all.
Yeah, that to me seems very crazy. Would you assume at this point in time that the top college coaches are making more than the average NFL head coach?
I would.
Yes.
I would. Yeah, I would.
Top 10 versus top 10?
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
You make more in college than you do.
I mean, you have a lot more headaches and everything, but still, that is interesting. So Dan Mullen, sixth on the list. Kirby Smart, if he wins the national championship, which we certainly talked a lot about Georgia football today on the show, just over $7 million, does he then go to become the highest paid coach?
Yes.
Jumps Saban?
Yeah, and yes.
And then Alabama will immediately move him, Saban, $1 ahead of Kirby Smart, but that'll be what happens.
Yeah, the other question, too,
obviously this doesn't include endorsements, so for people wondering, Saban makes a lot more money with Aflac.
So turn that list so I can see it a little bit here. So as you look at this list, Saban won, he's going to turn 70. How long does he do it?
35 more years.
You do get the impression he goes to 75, don't you?
I would say.
He coasts.
Yeah. I mean,
I would say at 80 is when we start talking about. So 10 more years.
Yeah. I would. I don't know if I'll go that far, but I'd be surprised if it's not five.
How old was Bobby Bowden?
When he got out of it now. Yeah, but
78, maybe?
Somewhere like
that. Right. And Saban, I'm going to say, is going to be probably a little bit sharper than Bowden was at that age.
Yeah, his team's certainly in better
shape. At least as of now.
The team's in better shape.
Yeah.
So Saban, let's say he goes 75. Orgeron's fired this year. Dabo. You know, Dabo's not going anywhere, but I do wonder if the great run's over. They're a little more ordinary. Anthony Peretti's about to text me. But I do wonder if the great run is over for Clemson. It's not a handful. It's not one and done like LSU was in great years. But I do sense. Do you think it's over, or do they bounce back?
I think there's got to be a little concern just over. You know, it looked like they would just have phenomenal quarterback follow phenomenal quarterback, and now that hasn't happened. And so, yes, I think that it's one of those things that how often are you going to have? Maybe it was more the oddity was that they were able to go Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, and that when they don't have that kind of a player, things start to fall apart a little bit more on them than you'd think. I still think, you know, Clemson's an elite program, and I'd be surprised if they fall from that. I would still think this is more a one-year thing than the trend, because I still think that they're recruiting at such a high level. But it's certainly a concern. I mean, you don't normally have – these elite teams don't normally have years like this that Clemson is having. So I think it's a fair question, but I would still have confidence that Clemson remains an elite program, at least for the next 5 years.
Yeah. Well, I always look to recruiting rankings to kind of at least guide the answer to the question. And for 2022, Clemson is 12th, and for 2023, 18th. Now, certainly a long time can happen, or a lot of things can happen a long time before 2023. But to be 12th for 2022, that means you've taken a massive step back.
Yeah, now he's built that. He built that at first without a lot of top three and top four recruiting classes. He built it with some seventh and eighth classes, but then he started having the big classes. We'll see.
But I don't think you can win a national championship without being in the probably top six of recruiting rankings.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's probably right.
You know, getting back to the David Shaw thing, because for me, that's a program I just don't think much about.
Right, same here.
But I find this interesting. He's only 49 still. It feels like he's been at Stanford for a while. He has been. He got there in 2011. But you want to talk about, are they getting their money's worth? So in his first 5 years, he goes Fiesta Bowl, Rose Bowl, Rose Bowl, Foster Farms Bowl, then Rose Bowl. Great start. Since then, he's gone Sun Bowl, Alamo Bowl, Sun Bowl, 4-8, 4-2 in the COVID year, and they're 3-3 this year.
Right, right.
I mean,
so maybe he missed his window to leave.
Yeah.
But he'll still be a hot commodity. When he wants to go to the NFL and makes it known, he'll get a job. That, don't you think?
That's a lot of for getting paid $9 million.
Right. Yeah. The question, I mean, the bigger question doesn't become whether or not he goes to the NFL. Is does Stanford keep paying him that kind of money to be mediocre? That's the question you got to ask. And I don't know that they do. In fact, I would suggest that they perhaps don't.
I would think that that's uncomfortable for Stanford to pay their football coach $9 million. That's not a universe that they feel like that's where we'll always be. LSU, like,
yeah,
I mean, they won't blink. They'll fire Ogeron and eat that money.
I agree with
and then
you.
They'll go hire another coach for $7 million.
Stanford has a bunch of programs. Stanford has more athletic programs than anybody. That's why they win that Director's Cup so often. But you're right. That still doesn't equate to that kind of money for your football coach, you wouldn't think. They really like him. Number one, Stanford's the one of the few schools that pays big money that winning really isn't everything. Every other school that pays big money, the three most important things are winning, winning, and winning. Stanford is a little different. They do care about which athletes they're getting. They do care about how the guy represents them. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think they win in a lot of other sports because they're constantly among the top of the Director's Cup, I only pay attention to because Florida's also in that, along with, I think, Texas and North Carolina. So I think they care about winning. I just don't know if they care about winning at football.
Yeah, well, they care, but I don't know. What I'm saying is I don't know that it's the only thing.
Right. He's 11-13 in his last 24 games.
Yeah, you can't keep – and what does he make, $8 million, you said? You can't keep – can't be paid like that. And make,
almost 8.92.
Yeah. So it'd be hard. So if you add all that up,
That was a great stat. I would have never thought he makes that kind of money.
All right, let's say hello to Rick Ballew.
Now the 2 minute drill brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit tireoutlet.com/careers. Equal opportunity employer.
Rick Ballew joins us now for Mr. Chubbies. What's up, Rick?
Man, big night, huge night, week 6 and game 5 in the National League Divisional Series in San Francisco. So I'm pretty excited. It's going to be a lot of fun beginning here in just a couple of minutes. And then looking forward to sitting back and enjoying football and baseball tonight.
Who you like in the National? Who you like, Giants or Dodgers? Who do you like tonight?
Kind of like the Giants now because of Logan Webb. I mean, he was so good his last outing. He struck out 10, didn't allow a run, and what an interesting decision here now by Dave Roberts to go with a reliever. Corey Knebel is going to go tonight. I was looking it up before the show. Here's a guy with 266 career games, only 4 starts. I imagine they're going to try to throw him in, see if he can get maybe 2 or 3 innings worth of outs, and then I suppose they'll go to Julio Urias then. But, boy, what an interesting decision to go with a reliever in a pivotal Game 5.
Yeah, boy, you're right. Really weird decision, I think, even though Urias has some time. So, really, really weird stuff. So, Rick's going to feel kind of weird not being in London, isn't it? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I have. It is a little different.
And I think we're doing it the right way, by the way, but it's just going to feel unusual.
Yeah, it will. Certainly to get ready for a 9:30 game. In the morning, that is going to be a little bit out of the ordinary. And, you know, I keep going back and forth and back and forth. I really believe Jacksonville has a really good chance to win this game. I've watched 3 complete Miami games this year, including the one last week against Tampa Bay. This is not a good football team. They have a lot of holes. And, you know, I just think if Jacksonville can make a big play, a couple of big plays, and limit their mistakes, they really have a chance to snap this 20-game losing streak.
We'll see what happens. I'll bet all that and a whole lot more coming up tonight, Rick. Rick Ballew live.
Absolutely, Frank.
Chubbies. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Rick Ballew checks in for Mr. Chubbies in just a bit. That's just about going to do it for our program. Tomorrow, live from Island Wing Company, we certainly look forward to that. We got our picks coming up. Am I going Jags or Dolphins? I'm torn right now. I am torn as well.
It's going to be a sleepless night.
You torn, Brooks?
I already told you how I'm picking.
You're going Jags. Okay, there you go. Folks, that's our program.
I believe in 1-6.
You do believe. Rick Beluga's into the night as soon as we get out of here. Thanks for joining us. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.
A lot of room in right center. If he hits one there, we can dance in the streets. The 2-1.